Hey guys, it's Pablo. I'm gonna level with you here. Now that Election Day has come and gone, I gotta imagine that you're nursing a literal or figurative hangover, possibly both. So this morning, we wanted to serve you something a little cold, but still refreshing, with just the right amount of hair of the dog, as they say, to keep you moving in the right direction. You're about to hear a special episode that we are really proud of at ESPN Daily, from the long ago time of September 10th. And we think it speaks squarely to how the country is feeling still today. It's about the role that the national anthem has played in sports, and how the song might still unify our democracy, even now, even amid the haze of 2020. When the national anthem plays before a game, it doesn't just pass by unnoticed. Not for most of us, at least. Not anymore. You could be standing on the court, like NBA coach Lloyd Pierce.
If the national anthem is something that we can continue to rally behind to show support and love for this country, I'm all for it. If it's going to continue to divide us, you know, I think maybe that's where the conversation comes.
Or watching through the lens of society at large, like historian Damian Thomas.
When the national anthem is being played, it's an opportunity for us to reflect on the United States, to reflect on our values, to reflect on who we are.
Or even performing it, like New Orleans musician and late show band leader John Batiste.
Things intersect socially and culturally with a song like this. It's not just a song that speaks to one swath of our population. It represents the whole of who we are, good and bad.
American sports, global sports, is in a new era of protest. Colin Kaepernick got canceled for kneeling during the anthem in the 2016 NFL season to protest anti-black racism and police violence. Now, a movement spurred by the murder of George Floyd has teams and leagues at every level taking a knee before games. Today, we investigate the complex and singular relationship between sports and the Star-Spangled Banner and contemplate the future of this American tradition. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, September 10th. This is ESPN Daily. If you got in a time machine 4 years ago and set it for 2020, your eyes would get wide for all kinds of reasons. And the sight of full teams, superstars, kneeling during the anthem with support from their coaches and owners and leagues, that would be one of the most startling.
Players, coaches, game officials alike, all taking a knee in Orlando.
Powerful moment before the game. During the national anthem, all of the players wearing Black Lives Matter shirts, most of them taking a knee, including Naperville Central alum Casey Short and her teammate Julie Ertz. Clearly emotions running high for both of them in that moment.
A moment of silence here and respect pregame in support of social justice. 17 different Texas Rangers players took a knee during that moment, including Rougned Odor, Robinson Chirinos.
The NFL is kicking off tonight, and whether you co-signed the venue of his protest or not, Colin Kaepernick did prove something that both sides of the aisle can agree on. There is no ritual more sacred in American sports than the Star-Spangled Banner. It would be crazy to underestimate how it makes us feel, as fans, as citizens, on all kinds of levels. And if you're a musician performing the anthem,
I'm testing the microphone, check, one, two.
You're the one who channels all those emotions and identities in that pregnant moment.
Can you hear that?
John Batiste is from New Orleans, a Juilliard Conservatory grad who, among many hats, leads the band for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. His latest take on the national anthem, played before the first game of the NBA restart in Orlando back in July, when players took the court amid questions of how they keep the focus on social justice from inside the bubble.
Tonight's presentation of the national anthem has been recorded by musician, producer, activist, and Louisiana native John Batiste.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, I want to know what went through your mind when you were contemplating how to perform this particular song at this particular moment. What did it mean to have this opportunity to remotely address this community amid a broader social movement in our country?
Asking these questions of how we fit into society and what society owes us and what society continues to maintain as the status quo have been questions that I've been wrestling with prior to all of the social unrest that we're seeing. Wrestling with these questions and dealing with the diasporic influences of Black music and really chronicling my own personal experience as a Black man in America and as a musician from the South. And, you know, this moment presented itself and it really felt organic to step into it. The anthem really being this culmination, this historical document, if you will, in our country.
There's also, you know, there seems to be a flavor of, like, to my uneducated ear, like a Southern rap kind of feeling. The beats that you put in there, there's the orchestra sound of the drums, there's maybe some Hendrix. So I just want you to clarify what went into your arrangement.
You have an ear, Pablo. You heard a lot. There's so many strains of the Black American experience. Me being from the South, I had a bounce beat that is something that I grew up hearing all over the streets of New Orleans. I pick up the guitar midway through with this kind of nod to Jimmy, the Jimi Hendrix version from Woodstock. Took the blues music, which came from sharecroppers and slaves, that then evolved into rock and roll and R&B. Adding that to the anthem with the classical timpanist and the cello being the counterline to what I was playing on the piano, that gives it this epic quality that I feel our diaspora deserves. If they were musicians, what kind of activism would my heroes portray in a moment like this?
Those who have said be patient and wait.
Congressman John Lewis.
We must say that we cannot be patient. We do not want our freedom gradually, but we want to be free now.
MLK.
But my poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
John, is there a particular rendition of the song throughout history that resonates with you?
There are so many, but you have to pick Whitney. You know, come on, man.
Yes, this was at the 91 Super Bowl, at the beginning of the first Gulf War. And an ESPN history of that performance says the NFL actually wanted Whitney's version sped up and re-recorded, but Whitney said no.
Whitney Houston sings the anthem the way that it should be sung.
Can John, I got to say, the Marvin Gaye 1983 NBA All-Star Game anthem, that is the one song I have played at a party, and people weren't immediately sure what it was, but they were down, man. It took like maybe 10 seconds to realize, wait a minute, this is the Star Spangled Banner.
Marvin's version of the anthem shows you that, you know, our culture and our tradition is to make lemonade. You could take something and you could filter it through the Black experience, and what comes out on the other side is just as soulful and as refreshing and as completely dope as anything.
And you can take this history of creativity and identity with the anthem back even further. Dr. Damian Thomas is sports curator at the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. He can point to the many ways the Star Spangled Banner made history, specifically through sports.
One is Jose Feliciano's rendition at the 1968 World Series. Really the first figure in a major sporting event who rearranged the national anthem. And he produced this Latin jazz version. I am a salsa dancer and I love to get out there and hear the music. And so thinking about how he, as a Puerto Rican, reimagine the song in a way that's reflective of his cultural heritage and his version of nationalism, I think is really powerful.
So how did this whole ritual start? When did we actually start playing the anthem before games in the first place? And why?
The national anthem has been played at sporting events going all the way back to the Civil War. Certainly, some of the most iconic moments are surrounding important moments where national unity was important. World War I, when the national anthem was played in a World Series game between Boston and Chicago. Certainly World War II, when the national anthem was played as a way of reminding people about the sacrifices that soldiers had made. And certainly when the NFL decided that it would make the national anthem a standard feature of its games, starting in 1945, linking the game with post-war patriotism. So I think the national anthem has a strong identity in terms of its connection with the sports world. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. A lot of this is intentional. A lot of it grows out of particular moments where the significance of the anthem becomes heightened. Certainly when we think about 9/11.
Oh, say can you see by
the... I remember that. As a native New Yorker, I acutely remember the first baseball game played in the city after 9/11. I remember how viscerally powerful and absolutely patriotic the anthem felt at that moment.
Broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous...
And how the anthem became a rallying cry for national unity. Certainly we can think about the partnership between the NFL and the military. The national anthem and the accompanying flyovers. Also think it's important to remember that we often think about athletes and soldiers in similar veins. That these are people who are symbols of American identity, and we have to acknowledge the ways that those two institutions often are seen going hand in hand.
And it's precisely because athletes are so important to American identity that what they say and do around the national anthem matters so much. Coming up, more about how athletes have used the anthem as a platform for the issues they care about, and everything that goes along with that.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
By now, we know the choreography. When the Star Spangled Banner plays before games, some athletes will lock arms in a solid line, and some may not take a knee, but will put a hand on a teammate's shoulder or a fist up in the air. And all of it traces directly back to 2016. But the anthem as a space for athlete activism has a deeper past. I asked Dr. Damian Thomas of the National African American Museum to tell me more about that history.
When I think back to the most common forms of protest or those that stand out, it's certainly Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Olympics.
The United States leads the Olympics in medal awards and is just about supreme in the sprint races, thanks to men like Tommy Smith and John Carlos. Yesterday, they came in first and third in the 200-meter dash, and then stood on the victory platform with bowed heads, wearing black socks and gloves in a racial protest.
Who also engaged in a silent protest with their heads bowed and their fists raised as a opportunity to draw attention to racial injustice in America in 1968, the year that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated and Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. Riots were taking place all over the inner city. And so I can't help but think about that moment and to think about the sacrifices that they made, the challenges that they endured because they decided to use their platform as a way not just to celebrate America, but to try to hold America accountable to those values. And so that to me is one of the most significant moments. And that's why we have memorialized that moment at the National Museum of African American History and Culture in the form of a statue, which sits at the beginning of our sports gallery. And I put that there because I wanted people to know that this would not be a gallery that just celebrates people who run fast and jump high. But it's really about how sports have been a space which has caused America to see the plight of African Americans and caused America to see sports as a place that can help bring about transformative and innovative changes in our society. And so for me, people ask me about what I'm most proud of in the museum, and it's the fact that we put that statue out front because it really does speak to the power of sports.
The power of athletes was front and center in August when NBA players refused to take the court during the playoffs, and then all the major pro leagues followed, postponing games in protest. The impetus was the police shooting that paralyzed Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And that night, the Atlanta Dream's Elizabeth Williams delivered a statement from the WNBA.
After speaking with representatives from teams playing tonight, as well as our WNBPA leadership, the consensus is to not play in tonight's slate of games and to kneel, lock arms, and raise fists during the national anthem.
Later, Atlanta Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce would speak to Blake's family in his role heading up Coaches for Racial Justice, a newly formed wing of the National Basketball Coaches Association. Pierce's Hawks are not in the Orlando bubble, so his team isn't facing the current spotlight of on-court activism. But Pierce says that if you focus too much on the kneeling and the anthem, you miss the bigger point.
I think what I'm speaking of and what we as coaches have gathered around has truly had nothing to do with the anthem. And really, it's been misrepresented in a lot of ways. When we say we fight for racial justice and reform and social injustices, and so the anthem, for whatever reason, whether it was Kaepernick, whether it was in 1968, Olympics in Mexico City, whenever we want to decide is the origin of the anthem being a part of fighting for equality, it's because we want people to say, do you hear us when we say racism exists? And we struggle to coexist because of the inequities and inequalities we have in this country. And so the national anthem has been used as an opportunity, one of many opportunities, to express and to voice our opinion on that. In the Colin Kaepernick situation, it became solely about the anthem and the messaging of what he was actually speaking up and speaking out against. It completely got overshadowed.
The president is very much against kneeling in general, that it does not respect our military men and women across this country. He's not a fan of the kneeling movement.
When everyone's watching sport, the first event they see on any coverage is normally the national anthem, followed by the introductions of the starting lineup and then the game. And so if that's our greatest opportunity and that's our best way of using our platform, then we want to show some solidarity. We want to show some unity. We want to show some support of what we believe in, what we're supporting, what we're fighting for.
That notion of should we kneel, should we not? Does everyone have to kneel? What happens if you don't? Are you being a traitor to a...
And think about it. As you're saying, should we kneel? Should we? And we stop talking about racism, racial justice. And that's the point. How do we keep talking about changing policies, changing the ideologies, those policies that are in legislation right now, those policies that exist won't be changed because we keep avoiding the conversation. We keep detracting from what we're standing up and speaking out against. And that's why we're supporting our players, is because we want to support their approach and their commitment to keeping the conversation going.
When we saw those players boycott playoff games in August, it kind of seemed like they took a big, significant step beyond kneeling. Do you think we'll now see the focus from players move away from kneeling in the anthem?
No matter what, moving forward, the anthem now is a controversial time. You know, if you stand, are you standing in opposition of those that are fighting for racial justice? If you kneel, are you misrepresenting or not supporting the military veterans or not showing patriotism to the flag? If you throw up your fist, you know, or does that mean, you know, like no matter what, the flag and the national anthem are now synonymous with controversy. And I think it's unfortunate because people want to support the fight for racial justice. They also want to support what they've always done or maybe raised to do during the national anthem, which is to honor the flag and honor their parents or grandparents who have fought in wars or have military backgrounds. I've never kneeled during the national anthem. So it's not a comfortable, it's not a comfort thing for me. But if it's a sign of solidarity, it's a sign of unity, it's a way to show my support with my fellow teammates and coaches and staff and players, because we agree that this is how we want to express ourselves, then I'm all for it and we'll do it in a heartbeat. If we're all going to stand, I'm all for it and we'll do it in a heartbeat. It's really our commitment to each other to show our support and our voice for what we believe in.
What would you like to see next? Because the NBA has this opportunity to make a real impact on issues like police brutality that remain so deeply structural and systemic.
Well, I think there's necessary steps we all have to go through. Let's say we don't put Black Lives Matter on the court and we don't do anything during the national anthem and we don't speak in the media to keep the conversation alive. And then we just announce that the NBA is going to invest $300 million over the next 10 years. And then we go back on to basketball. Now you're just throwing money at the problem. Money is needed for that. We understand that. That's extremely important. But what's also needed is how do we change policies? How do we become educated on what policies exist that are by design racist in nature? We have to create conversations. We have to address and identify what those issues are so that when we invest that money, we're investing it with a purpose and a direction. I think the underlying theme for us in sport is to win the game, figuring out where we can best lend our hand and our support and trying to rally behind an idea followed by a plan and a partnership so that we're a part of the solution and the change.
Athletes are most effective on social change when they're in sync and building on conversations started by other types of leaders, says Dr. Thomas of the African American Museum. Protests and calls for reform rarely originate from within sports. And he says that's as it should be.
What athletes can do is to respond to these social movements and to amplify the voices of the unheard. So at their best, what athletes do is draw attention to social issues that might be discussed in pockets within America and in communities across the country. But when athletes become involved, what they do is help nationalize a conversation.
So where do athletes' voices go from here? And as the NFL season kicks off this week, how does the role of the national anthem at games start to change? Final thoughts on the next steps coming up.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
As athletes sharpen their voices, team owners and league commissioners have responded very differently than in the past. They've said they won't enforce rules against player protest. They've made public statements, at times clumsy, voicing support for Black Lives Matter. And the NFL will start the 2020 season by adding a song to this whole pregame ritual. Alongside the Star-Spangled Banner will be Lift Every Voice and Sing. This song is often called the Black National Anthem. John Batiste put it into perspective for me.
James Weldon Johnson composed a song that encapsulates the greatest ideals of Black Americans. All of the aspirations that we have achieved from being enslaved in this country are represented in the lyrics and in the ethos and the energy of that song. We want to be emotional champions of the greatest country in the world. And that song, it speaks to that spirit and that emotion.
Dr. Thomas went further, framing the song against a discussion that has long needed to happen across all pro sports, but especially in football.
Lift Every Voice and Sing is a beautiful song. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out in the context of the NFL. We're facing discussions about lack of access to head coaching jobs, prime coordinator jobs, lack of access to general managers' jobs, the lack of diversity of ownership. It makes me wonder, what is the NFL doing to ensure that the billions of dollars that it generates are distributed across all spectrums of society? And so while I think it is an important symbolic gesture, I hope that the NFL is ready to respond when these symbolic gestures inevitably lead to calls for more reform. It's going to be hard for me to hear the Black National Anthem be played and to think about Colin Kaepernick, who continues to be blackballed from the league. To me, if you want to talk about the most important symbolic gesture the NFL can take, it's to make sure that Colin Kaepernick is on an NFL roster.
That ceiling on symbolism is what continues to frustrate Coach Lloyd Pierce, who believes the Black National Anthem does more than just honor Black Americans. He says it points to our collective need to recognize and digest this undeniably American reality, that slave labor built this nation. It's a point inspired by attorney, scholar, and social activist Brian Stevenson, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative.
Brian Stevenson talks a lot about truth and justice and the reconciliation of all the things that we've dealt with as African Americans in this country.
Our history has scarred us. It has bruised us. It has injured us. But when we tell the truth about that history, we can achieve something that looks more like justice. And when we do it, I think we will find ourselves standing, maybe for the first time, more liberated from this history that has so condemned us.
We talk about our military and our war heroes, and for their national pride and commitment to serve in this country. Well, it's the same when you think of all the Africans and all of the slave workers. They're the backbone of this country. And so when you talk about reconciliation and you talk about truth and justice, when we honor this country, we have to honor every individual. And that includes the African Americans and those that were enslaved, that worked the cotton fields, that worked the infrastructure and built this country up the way it is now. We have to honor them as well.
And so, if it's all become so understandably fraught, what about changing this tradition, changing how we honor our country through sports? What about taking the Star-Spangled Banner out of the game altogether? It's an idea now posed by journalists from Sports Illustrated to the San Francisco Chronicle, and players like WNBA stars Brittany Griner and Breonna Turner, and coaches like Bruce Arena, formerly of U.S. Soccer. And look, some countries do still play their anthems before all sorts of events, movies and plays and concerts. But in the U.S., we don't stand up hand over heart before watching Star Wars. I posed the idea of getting rid of the anthem to John Batiste.
I think that we have to have something that we all agree represents who we are. That's the reason that we have a flag. That's the reason that we have an anthem. The thing that ties a country together is identity. And we're fighting over the question of what is the intention of our identity? Is the intention of this American identity to have freedom for all? Or is the intention of this American identity to have freedom only for some? And I think if we remove the symbols of our identity, we lose something very important without actually defining the intention, which is the root of the problem.
And Damian Thomas articulated another dilemma related to those concerns about ownership. He worries that if you get rid of the anthem before games, you also lose this uniquely important and uniquely public space to reckon with ourselves.
I think while the anthem is designed to give us opportunities to express our patriotism, I think it also gives us opportunity to question the nation as well. The anthem is both a song of patriotism, but it's also a song of protest. I would hate to lose the opportunity for the song to be used as a way to do both.
In fact, that duality of pride and of critique has an additional resonance today in particular. Coach Pierce notices a parallel between the two biggest news stories of our time. This movement for racial equality on the one hand, and this ongoing attempt to solve a pandemic on the other.
We all rely on each other to get through this pandemic. I rely on you to wear your mask. I rely on you to wash your hand. It isn't me just doing my part. I have to help you understand why you need to wear your mask so that we can all help each other. And when we talk about the racial pandemic, I have to keep this conversation alive. We have to keep this conversation alive. It's us speaking to each other about racism and racial injustice. So now we can identify that it is a problem, and then we can start trying to identify what some of those areas that will help us overcome this problem.
That's the power of a song about this ongoing experiment that is America. We are less united than ever in 2020, divided even over the reason for our division. But there is one more detail about the Star-Spangled Banner itself that feels both instructive and indisputable. Those words that end the song before every game, about the land of the free and the home of the brave. In the original manuscript by Francis Scott Key, that specific line doesn't actually end with an exclamation point or a period. It ends with a question mark. It's an invitation to keep asking and answering the question. Thanks to John Batiste, Dr. Damian Thomas, and Coach Lloyd Pierce. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
How's that?